Welcome everyone to this unique, new, and I don't know how else to frame it.
Expansion of amazing quality.
Yeah.
AKA average. Average quality.
Expansion of average content. We are branching out into lore. So average guys, average 40k, average lore. So this will be a litmus test with our listenership as jury as to whether we do it again. just as an adjunct, we can't do our usual Friday because it's Minch's wife's birthday tomorrow.
Yes, and she's playing a game of soccer, so I will be MIA tomorrow. So we, you know, Ben had this fantastic idea. I'm so excited.
And we've gone for the low-hanging fruit. So if we're going to do average lore, let's call a faction specialist in. So Michael talking about Eldar, I don't think we can fail.
Look, if I did, I'd be very disappointed in myself. Look, first of all, thanks so much to everyone who jumped on board and commented or sent messages. I had a great conversation with Jack Lavercombe about Eldar stuff. We were shouting obscure Eldar lore at each other that both of us hadn't heard of, and it was really, really exciting. So he's definitely given me a few tidbits to share with you all. And yeah, look, I live and breathe Eldar, so I'm super excited for this. But just before we jump into the lore, we've got a couple of exciting announcements. Exciting announcement number one, I'm going to shout out an average 40k player, one Benjamin Corby, who has gone 2-1 at an Acolyte RTT.
Yes, I did. And just so everyone that knows, I've been on the competitive scene now for 13, 14 months, and I have this habit of going 1-2. Unless it's a GT or a Super Major, then I go 4-4 or 3-3 respectively. But this is the first time I've gone 2-1.
First time you've had a winning record, my man.
It didn't. I looked at my ITC ranking this morning because obviously the results funneled through, and I'm in the top 100 of Australia now. I'm number 90.
Dude, that's amazing. I'm definitely nowhere near the top 100, that is for sure.
No, but I'm on my sixth event now, so I'm hoping to build on my sixth event and have my 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th and 12th, and that will be uprising, and hopefully, look, I had an aim this season to finish in the top 100, so to be there halfway through the season at 90, I am pretty damn stoked. I had three amazing games. I played Sam Young, my nemesis, in my first game with his Yunariquins. I sent you his list, Minches, and you just wrote back, ouch.
Rough, ouch.
Yeah, basically that sums up the game. But notwithstanding that, Sam is a brilliant player. He runs meme lists. The only complaint I have about him is that after a game, he packs up his models like a seven-year-old packs up his Legos. He literally just throws them in a bucket, pretty much. That's my only beef, and no disrespect to his models, like they aren't pro painted, but still, it's an ick. Second game into Chaos Knights, which was fantastic. A sort of a newish player, but we had a really good time and a really good game. And my third game was into a guy I'd never met before, or played against, Michael Zooks and his Astra Militarum. I was a bit nervy with this massive gun line facing my knights, but yeah, the tankiness of the knights and yeah, look, I'm going to say a bit of clever movement on my part and some lucky tactical secondaries were quite good. And yeah, I got the 95-60 in that game. So, yeah.
Solid.
Yeah, no, really, really happy. And we've hit 202 members on Facebook.
Woohoo! Boys and girls, yeah. I think when we put the challenge out, it was not even a week ago because it was our last podcast, Ben, and we were at 175. Yes. And I put the challenge out and we hit 200 and we're at 202. Now, I have to do this, Ben, because you have a massive whinge if I don't. one Mr. Braden Robinson sent me a screenshot of the list of people and goes, there is at least 8 people I directly invited to get into this group. And I was like, you're an absolute legend, dude. I really appreciate your support. And he goes, mate, it's what mates do. We support each other. I was like, love you long time. But big shout out to Braden Robinson and to everyone who's been encouraging their mates to join our group, to get on board. It's really appreciated. We're really excited. Obviously, we're finding time in other nights of the week to record podcasts just because we can't make the normal night. It's a fantastic journey that I'm really, really enjoying, and I know Ben is too.
Yeah, and I'm going to shout this guy out every episode, Mr. Greg Burgess. Not doing too well at the moment. Having a bit of a tough time with his illness. Yeah, man, we're thinking of you. Hoping these podcasts give you a bit of serenity in those midnight wake-ups that you've been referring to. Greg, thinking about your mates, so yeah.
Big shout out. I've had to Greg. I've known him for many, many years now. We used to play fantasy back in the day. We both play high elves, so there was a lot of mutual respect back then. But big shout out to the guys who've helped me with looking out for Greg and looking after him. I've had one mate, Matt Savage, who downloaded just an entire Storm Raven. He says, do you know someone who would buy this? I said, I know someone who really wants it. I told him about Greg, and he goes, look, you can just have it. An anonymous person actually donated the funds for Greg's last purchase through me, so all Greg had to pay for was postage, and I sent that off to him today. So thank you very much, anonymous donor, for that really, really kind gesture. Yeah, guys, it's all about getting behind people in this hobby, and when someone's really struggling, it just shows the caliber of people in our community, and I really appreciate and respect all of you.
Yeah, thanks everyone. And the poems coming in for Korn are really good. Chat GP has had a bit of a workout. There's been some self-penned limericks, and there's even a very, very provocative theorem that has been sent to me. I think I've decided, and I haven't spoken to you yet about it yet, that
sounds about right.
We're going to have to read these out anonymously and get an anonymous judge to choose the winner. So when we read them out, there's no bias, no favoritism. I don't know, Michael, what do you think? Do you think that's
I think that's a great idea. I love that idea. We won't be able to read them out tonight, though, because we've got such a jam-packed episode full of amazing stuff. But it means everyone's got till maybe next Friday. Friday to get to entries in. Ben and I are madly sending them to each other. And yeah, we'll get Ben to read them out. And I think we'll have to find at least one judge, maybe a panel of 3 judges to choose, maybe some Korn experts.
Maybe we ask the Down Under 40K guys. Maybe we ask Dale and Sam and one of those guys.
I don't mind that. Or we could get really cheeky. We could ask one Down Under 40K guy. We could ask someone from Art of War Down Under, I don't know who that could be, and we ask someone from the Normal Blokes, and we get all 3 other podcasts engaged in this.
Ooh, I like that too. All right, you chat to Denise. I'll reach out to Dale and Sam. I don't know where to start with Art of War, but
we'll talk about that off air. We'll see.
Or maybe Dean Sinbeck, the blog for the Blood Gods.
Oh, yeah. Look, I feel like that's a pretty good pick too.
That is a good pick. Like, if we've got to give Sinny something, because he is pretty much Korn. But anyway, we're waffling. We're on a time limit. And we're actually here to talk about Eldar. Now,
welcome to episode 8, guys. Yeah. Episode 8 of The Gathering Storm. We're getting closer and closer to that double digits.
Average 40k, average guys, now average lore. Now, what brought this about was, some of you may know I'm putting some Eldar together, and I'm like, I want to know a little bit more about them. And rather than just message Minches non-stop, I thought we could do a lore episode. Now, I'm a lore junkie, isn't that I consume it. I listen to Lorehammer and Adeptus Ridiculous, 2 very good podcasts. Lorehammer's now wrapped up after 5 years, but Adeptus Ridiculous is still going, so shouting out to not our competitors, but our fellow podcasters. But given Minches is a faction specialist, I thought, let's do this. They're featuring very heavily at this Sunrising of 10th edition. There was a good showing at the RTT I was at. They didn't win, but they they had a good representation. And now that I'm putting them together, and it probably started with me assembling and painting my Wraith Guard, and I asked Michael, how do they see out of these blank helmets?
That's a good, let's start with that question. That's a great question to start with. Let's shout it out on episodes. So the exciting thing for me, as soon as Ben starts asking me questions about Eldar, is I definitely get a diamond dick and just get really, really excited. So appreciate him keeping me engaged and happy for the last couple of weeks. But Wraith Guard, Wraith Lords, Wraith Seers.
Wraith as a keyword.
Yeah. No, I'm going to come back to that in a moment. Yeah, okay. there's a big one for me there. So your Wraith Guard, your Wraith Seers, your Wraith Lords, what they are is they're a Wraithbone construct. So imagine like a shell, if you will. And what happens with the Eldar when they die is their soul actually goes into a spirit stone. The reason why it goes into a spirit stone, as my good friend Jono Webb wanted to be alluded to, is She Who Thirsts. Slaanesh is always after their soul. So when they die, if they don't have a spirit stone to go into, they get consumed by Slaanesh, which for the Eldar is a real bad time, because, for spoiler alert, those of you who don't know, Eldar partying actually birthed Slaanesh, the Chaos God, wiped out 95% of their race, and it's why they are now a dying race and in the twilight of their heyday. So the way the spirit stone works is it goes into something called the Infinity Circuit, which, thank you very much, Steve Jobs and Apple, is like the cloud. Yeah, imagine iCloud, but a literal space on every craft world where the spirit stones get placed, and that's where they continue to exist. So it's, I wouldn't say it's life after death, but it's sentience after death.
Can it be hacked like a cloud?
No.
Oh.
No, but if the craft world falls and the spirit stones get pulled out and they get destroyed, souls go to Slaanesh. So it's a real bad time. So the way Wraith Guard work is they actually place the spirit stones into the Wraith Guard armor, and then these souls are reawoken and they are now warriors again. They can now fight. Spirit Seers have a really crucial role here because they can help enliven Wraith Guard. So Wraith Guard, Wraith Lords, typically without a Spirit Seer, like they still exist, but they're a bit more lumbering, they're a bit slower to think and to act. But Spirit Seers are a very specialized path of the Seer where they can connect with the Wraith Guard and issue them orders and enliven them in such a way where they become faster, more responsive. Now, the reason why I say not all Wraith keywords, Ben, is because the Wraith Knight's a bit of a different one. Now, the people may be aware that Wraith Guard, Wraith Seers, Wraith Lords have a weapon skill and basic skill of 4+ in this edition, but a Wraith Knight has a 3+. The reason being for that is the way a Wraith Knight works is a Wraith Knight is actually a twin. Eldar twins are not very common, which you wouldn't believe given the amount of Wraith Knights you see on the table, but they're not. And the way a Wraith Knight works is it's a twin, a set of twins where one has died. So you have one of the twins in the Infinity Circuit, in the Spirit Stone inside the suit, and one of the twins living, piloting as well. And that's where the connection comes from. That's why they are better at fighting, because they've got a living soul with a dead soul. So. Yeah, exactly. Now, there are rumors of craft worlds who are so under pressure and so, like, struggling against Chaos, Orcs, Necrons, Tyranids, take your pick of, you know, the old foes, where there's rumors of them taking sets of twins and killing one so they can put them inside of a Wraith Knight as a tool to defend the rest of the craft world.
Wow, indentured servitude.
Yep.
Elder style.
Well, it's kind of a recurring theme. The Court of the Young Prince is the whole shebang behind raising an avatar. So every single craft world has a shard of the avatar of Caelib and Chicane, and to awaken the avatar from the Court of the Young Prince, one is selected and they go into the Chamber of the Avatar and endure 12 hours of a horrible, horrible, horrible death. And when the doors reopen, the avatar of Cain walks out. So it's a living sacrifice to awaken the spirit. So you've got sacrifices, you know, fratricide of twins being murdered. You've got souls being taken from their rest to be put into wraiths, wraith everything. because of the fact they're a dying race and they just don't have the numbers anymore. This is the lengths that they have to go to.
Maybe they need to embrace Slaanesh and frequent coitus and
look
that lustful lifestyle that Slaanesh is all about.
Like, well, they did, and 95% of them were killed with psychic backlash. So,
okay,
it was a rough time. I'm going to move away. I love my wraith, so I'm going to move away from this question before I get too far down the rabbit hole. I'm going to just start going through some of the questions that we've got. Well,
we have a few in there.
Yes.
I'm going to be a selfish prick because I'm co-hosting this. And I promise myself you won't have to hit the explicit button for this episode. And I just said prick. No, nothing else. Don't look at me with that tone of voice.
It's the teacher look, yeah?
What does Bobby G have to do with the Elder?
You don't even know. You play Ultramarines and you don't even know. I'm so disappointed in you, Ben.
Again, don't look at me with that tone of voice.
Alright, you be shush and listen right now. You be shush and listen right now. Because first of all, the first book that links to this is called, drumroll, The Gathering Storm.
Okay, I didn't even know it was a book. I just thought you came up with a cool name.
And The Gathering Storm has Ultramarines and Eldar in it. And when I was talking to you, you were like, I love Ultramarines. And I was like, I love Eldar. I was like, oh, cool name for a podcast. Your Ultramarines and Eldar working together. This would be great. And Ben's like, yay, Gathering Storm friends. And now I realize my huge mistake. So in The Gathering Storm, which is one of the many, many campaigns that happen, Yvraine, who is an Eldar psyker who is embracing the cult of your need or the craft world of your need, whatever you want to call it. There's lots of conjecture here. But basically, it's a different avatar where death is exploited on a different scale. Now, in this, because Eldar are pretty hard-pressed and we look at the monkeys and go, look, they're better than most, she brought Robert Gilliman back to life.
Bobby G.
Brought Robot Girlyman back to life. So he was in stasis after his fight with Alpha or Omegon or Lafarius or some Hydra wuss. And because of the ability for her to manipulate life and death, she brought him out of that stasis and kept him alive. So there's rule 43, 37, whatever the rule is, if it exists, then there's pornography of it. There's arguments that Yvraine is Bobby G's girlfriend.
Oh.
Yeah.
There was actually a question in the chat.
Do you want me to read out the question?
Yeah.
It's from my good friend Lachlan Gordon. And I really appreciate this, Lachlan. We've had jokes about who the better Eldar player is, and I'm not going to say anything to him. I'm just going to let him remember that glorious game that we had. He said, if Yvraine were to engage in coitus with mankind, who and why? And the easy answer, the answer that everyone wants to say is Robert Gilliman. And I'm going to say no, because I have a massive, massive love for the Caiaphas Cain novels. The commissar who acts like an actual normal freaking human being who goes, I don't want to go near the danger. I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to try and get out of the dangerous situation. I want to serve with a field artillery regiment because I'm 12 kilometers away from the fighting. And this dude literally is the Hugh Hefner of the Imperial Guard. He has happy, fun times with many, many women. And I thought to myself, if ever there was someone I would like to see a book where Caiaphas Cain and Yvraine go on a date. And by go on a date, I mean go on a date. You mean, no one else can see the quotation marks that I'm sending to Ben, but there's definitely quotation marks. Means
they have first date shenanigans.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my answer, Lachlan Gordon.
So do I need to buy a Yvraine model to stand next to my Bobby G model in my glass cabinet?
Like, yes.
Is that like the Barbie and Ken of 40K?
I've never thought about it like that. I want you now to get a new Robot Girlyman and a Yvraine. I want you to paint them up as Barbie and Ken. I mean, the robot's kind of already there.
I've got Bobby G. I really feel like not having the Yvraine model standing next to Bobby in the cabinet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to come down in the middle of the night and find them in a compromising pose that I probably put them in myself after too many whiskies and wonder how they got that way. I've got him standing next to a baton at the moment.
Yeah, look, let's hope we don't find them in a compromising permission.
Yeah.
Permission?
Yeah.
Position. It's been a long day, boys and girls.
It has been a long day. So, Yvrain, you need Incarn. So, I noticed there's a common denominator there with spelling. So, does this all tie to Yunari?
Ooh, he's quick, boys and girls. He's quick. Yes, it is. The Yunari is their equivalent craft world, and I really like how even in the last codex they kind of made it as just an equivalent craft world. So like all your five major craft worlds, you've got Biltan, you've got Ulthwe, you've got Alaytok, you've got Iand, and you've got Symhan. You have Yunari, which is another craft world, and then you've got all your minor craft worlds that are not as well known. You've got your Lugunath, your Altansar, your Ibrahil, you've got your Myamira, you've got my boys Yimlok, which is what I love to see. You've got I think that's most of them.
So
Altansar
The outsider that isn't very elder aware, I'm gonna say you hear a lot of keywords. You hear Yunari, you hear Ulthwe, you hear Eldari, you hear craft world, and it can get a bit overbearing until you actually sit down, you unpack it all, and then you've got Harlequins. But yet they can all be like souped together.
Yes.
In their own ways. So Sam Young, who beat me game one, called his list the Yunariquins. Yes.
Yeah.
And they were at like it was a soupy archetype. You know, the Incarn did feature. There was a whole heap of troops, troop masters, etc. So these are all craft worlds with different disciplines, is it different habits? Is it different beliefs? Different.
Yeah. How they all the same? So, looking at the three main things. So, if you look at just craft world, Eldari, yep. You look at Harlequins, and you look at Jakari or Dark Eldar. So,
yeah.
In layman's terms, and this is always a subjective, you know, topic with 40K. You've got your good guys, your bad guys, and your neutral guys. So your good guys are your Eldar, your bad guys are your Dark Eldar, and your neutral guys are your Harlequins. Now, historically, Harlequins have always, they live in the Webway, and they give performances, and in those performances, they either send messages or they assassinate, they do all this amazing cool stuff. I just finished reading the Beast of Rises series, there's Harlequins in that. One of the best Harlequin stories, and I'm going to put you onto this one, Ben, because it's a short story, it's called The Mask of Vile, and it's how a Harlequin troop infiltrates a Drukhari Archon court, and how they attack this whole situation is just incredible. But Harlequins, they follow the Laughing Gog, Segarach or Kegarach, however you want to pronounce it. I prefer Kegarach, but he's kind of their patron, and he is, and I'm sure someone's going to tell me I'm wrong, but that's completely fine because it's average lore. He is still alive. He is one of the Eldar gods who is still alive. They follow him. Now, your Dark Eldar, they live off pain. They live off inflicting pain. And depending on how they die, they can be rebuilt by homunculi. And if they are ever obliterated, or if they go through the warp and they're not protected, Slaanesh eats them. Now, the generic concept for all pointy-eared guys is that no matter what, a Dark Eldar's life is more important to an Eldar than any other life. And for a Dark Eldar, an Eldar's life is more important than any other race. So whilst they don't like each other, whilst they fight, at the end of the day, they will go, well, I like you a little bit more than everyone else. And our race is dying, and you're still of our race, so we would rather you live than an orc or a Tyranid or a man or a space marine or a, you know, Necron. It's Tau. It's, that's kind of where the loyalties lie.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. Question from Nick Smith.
Oh, my boy, Nick.
I would like to know more about the Webway. What does it look like? Is it just a space tube like I'm imagining? Does it look or taste like those chocolate wafer things with the sick tins? Nick, you and I just became best friends. I love the way you've referenced that.
I can't even remember what they're called. I can picture them too, and they're like the chocolate wafer things, and they got the circle swirl, and they're delicious. Look, this is, I guess this all comes down to your own imagination, how you interpret descriptive language. For me, I imagine the Webway as tunnels. That's how I see it. And these tunnels have offshoots, they have caves, they have entries and exits in all these different places. But like a lot of tunnels, some tunnels are filled with water. Some tunnels, you know, have fallen down. Some tunnels are collapsed. Some tunnels are fine. New tunnels are made. So the way that the Webway is, it's a safe way for the Eldar to travel without going through the warp. Because again, the warp is not a good place for them.
Does anyone else travel through the Webway other than the Eldar?
Harlequins do?
Yep.
Now, inside the Webway is a giant library called the Black Library. Now, there's this dusty boy, or king of the dusty boys. He's not actually dusty himself, one Ahriman, who has always been trying to get into the Black Library. As a rule, not
Isn't
typically.
He strange?
Yeah. Yeah, look. The Harlequins don't like him, but typically it is just for Eldar. Some of the places have been corrupted by chaos. There is an Inquisitor who has been into the Black Library. So...
As in an Imperial Inquisitor?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But generally it is just for Eldar.
So I just see it as a bit of a nervous system, Nick. That's the way I've imagined it when I've been reading it. Listening to story-based podcasts and audiobooks. I think it's probably no different to us imagining outer space and the possibility of life forms out there, etc. So, keep your imagination alive with the Webway, I think's the outtake. We have so many questions here.
Yeah, mate, start at the top, work your way down. I'm ready for them all.
No, I'm trying to pick them out as maybe they fall into line, and I'm just putting the like button on them once we've answered them, so I know where we're up to and what we've done.
Big brain.
How do the Phoenix Lord suits work? Is it whoever wears the suit gives up their life for the Phoenix Lord? Over to you.
So,
Ryan Paul, thank you.
Yeah, my mate, Mr. Savage. So the way the Phoenix Lord suits works is typically only Exarchs can wear them. Once an Exarch, because an Exarch is someone who has fallen into the path of a warrior. So an Exarch is someone who has gone to an aspect and they have fallen into it. Okay, they don't actually leave. Unlike a lot of Eldar where they travel different paths, an Exarch is now, for lack of a better term, they're almost like a slave. They're obsessed with that craft world. Oh, sorry, not that craft world, that path. And they don't leave that path. So when an Exarch finds the Phoenix Lord suit or dons it, because some are found, some they already know where they are, their consciousness is removed from their body. And the Phoenix Lord, whoever that Phoenix Lord is, takes over their body. Now that Exarch, because Eldar, you know, they don't just die. That would be very boring for them. The consciousness of that Exarch, their knowledge, their skills, their like their historical understanding, their current world events, is trapped inside the suit. So again, we're going on down that sacrificial route of the, you know, what's best for the craft world. So inside that suit is multiple Exarch consciousness that then assist the Phoenix Lord with what they're doing. So if you've read the Path of the Warrior Outcast series, which I hate to say this, Gav Thorpe is not a writer I enjoy, and the fact that he has written a lot of Eldar books breaks my heart. But they go through that with the Striking Scorpion Phoenix Lord Carandrus. And that's how that kind of works. So when an Exarch dons a suit, their consciousness is removed from the physical shell and imparted into the suit, and the Phoenix Lord consciousness overwhelms the body. Almost parasitic, I guess. And now they are.
So there's a question here from Trent Orwin. And talking about Phoenix Lords, he says, who is your favourite and least favourite, and tell us your reason.
Okay, so my favourite Phoenix, and see, this is a tough one, because are we looking at lore perspective here, or are we looking at game perspective? As this is a lore episode,
Yes.
I guess that we should look at law perspective.
Yep.
So for me, from law perspective, I'll do my least favorite first because that's a little bit easier. My least favorite Phoenix Lord from law perspective is Baharoth for two reasons. Reason number one, he's the youngest of the Phoenix Lords, so he has the least history. Reason number two, I haven't actually encountered very much lore about him. Take away the snippets they put in codexes, but stories or information or even just general knowledge. Like, if you look at the rest of them, you look at Asuman, he's an absolute badass. You look at Jayne Zar. I finished reading the Soul Hunter trilogy recently, and she appears in that, which is awesome. You look at Fugen, he is the one who will cause the Rana Dandra, which is the cataclysmic event for Eldar, where either they will come back into power or they will perish. You look at Morgan Ra, and you go, well, hang on a second. This bad boy here went solo into the warp and brought his Craftworld back out. So Altansar is the Craftworld where his shrine, the Morgan Ra shrine, is, and he's that badass that he actually went into the warp and rescued the whole Craftworld. Because Craftworlds are giant ships, they're not worlds per se, they are like world ships, so they can move, they can travel. So he's gone in, kicked Chaos butt and brought them out. Now, there's Jack and I were talking about this today. There's a little bit of, when I say a little bit, I mean a whole heap of suspicion from other Eldar Craftworlds, because these Eldar have been in the warp for some time, not a good place for Eldar, and they don't actually remove their helmets. So there's concerns that these Eldar are actually tainted by Chaos. Now, it hasn't been proven, and I look at someone like Morgan Ra, who is not against killing people. It's hard to see if it's true or not. So Morgan Ra is badass. Corandros is really interesting for another reason. He's not actually the first Phoenix Lord of the Striking Scorpions. Ara, who is now Drazhar, Master of Blades for Drukhari, was the first Striking Scorpion Phoenix Lord. But if you had to look at my favorite, oh, it's my boy Asuman. I love him to pieces. He's the first
Sure.
Phoenix Lord I bought. First Phoenix Lord I bought. Used to play him in lists, like, just love that guy to death. And the fact
So,
that he's another one where his twin soul is inside his sword, so I'm like, okay, I can get down with that.
there's a question here. Didn't Eldred Uthulan die
So
from Thomas Murray? And
yep.
also, what's the deal with the Eldar Pantheon?
So it was previously established that Eldred Uthrun died in the 13th Black Crusade. However, they retconned that. The Eldar Codexes from 6th edition onwards make no mention of that, but what they do say is that he is crystallizing. So Eldred Uthuan is the oldest Eldar alive still. So he tried to stop the Horus Heresy. So putting that in perspective, he tried to stop the Horus Heresy from happening. And he was old then.
Sounds like the Imperium need to team up with the Eldar.
Look, they've had more successful instances of them teaming up. Unfortunately, Eldrad went, "Hey, Primarch, be careful. There's chaos and corruption." And the Primarch turned around and went, "I know. My name's Fulgrim, and I'm corrupted." And Eldrad went, "Ah, oh, shit."
Ah, too late.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's how they kind of retconned that. And Eldrad's badass. I don't want him to die.
So, who are the most powerful psykers for the Eldar? They're looking for names and not just generic farseers. Again, that's Trent Orwin.
Yeah, so there is a few mentioned that are quite powerful Eldar psykers. So some of the ones that people will know of that aren't necessarily Eldrad, you've got Farseer Macho of Beeltan, who featured in Dawn of War. You've got, who else have we got? It's a good one. Belenath of Mimir, she was in some of the Forge World books. She was quite powerful. Kaelor has a lot of Farseers mentioned because of their book, which is The Prophecy of Eldar, which I really do recommend. You've got Eldrass Starbane, who's from Aelaetok. My personal favorite, which is Farseer Mirian Balin. I don't remember what Craftworld he's from. I don't actually know if it's mentioned, but he's the one who has the quote, "The stars themselves once lived and died in our command, yet you still dare oppose our will." And I was like, that's just such a badass thing to say to someone. Like, we control the universe, and you're trying to say, no, we don't want to listen to you. So they're some of the most powerful psykers. You've got Iriana, who's a spirit seer from Iandan, who's pretty damn Kick-Ass 2. Like,
they're
there's
the yellow ones, aren't they?
Yellow and blue, Ghosty Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's just a selection of powerful psychers.
Yeah, there's a couple of questions about Exodites here. Where did the Dino Rider aesthetic for the Exodites start? Is it a fan-driven thing? Or is there actually lore to support it? And that's from Chase Price.
So Exodite lore is actually really well supported. So Exodites are the original Craftworlds who went, you know what? We don't like all this partying. We don't like how we're leaving the old ways. So we're going to leave. We're going to move away. And they went to the outskirts of the galaxy because they didn't appreciate, they didn't vibe with this whole partying, debauchery, you know, finding all the excess. So they left. And they left ages before anything happened with Slaanesh. So they are what some people would argue is less advanced or more primitive. And that goes for their crafter as well. So the dinosaur aesthetic is legit. It is lore-backed, and it is freaking awesome. Like, who doesn't want
like
people riding dinosaurs?
Yeah,
100%. So the old ones being the oldest race in the 40k galaxy that we know of, tied maybe with three of the four Chaos Gods. But yeah, there is lore to support it, and if models come out, I'm going to sell a kidney, because I've seen some conversions, and I've thought about conversions. Like, I've seen, you know, Bastillodons and Stegodons turned into Fire Prisms and Falcons and Night Spinners, and I was just like, oh, jet bikes being Cold One Cavalry, and even people using things like Wood Elf Cloaks to help make their ranges, to make them seem more, you know, aesthetically Exodite-y. There's definite potential, and if they bring out real models...
Well, Sam Lemon's talking about that, the rumours of Exodites coming during 10th edition. And I guess that leads into Sam's question. I'd love to hear more about who are the Corsairs and Exodites. So Sam, we've gotten a bit of a vignette on the Exodites. So how do the Corsairs, do they tie in with the Exodites, or is that...
No, they're their own thing completely. So Corsairs, one of the paths that Eldar can follow is called Path of the Outcast. And they are, I guess for lack of a better term, the most shunned, but one of the most critical. You'll find lots of rangers and pathfinders follow this path, but also Corsairs, where they go, we're going to leave our craft world and we're going to go see the galaxy. So these are the Eldar who learn news outside of, you know, prophecy, outside of finding out too late. And they still send messages back to their craft world saying, hey, there's this pretty big Tyranid fleet that's in four systems over. You should be prepared. So Corsairs, pirates, kind of like the Eldar version of rogue traders, yeah? Not exactly always following the rules, but a really crucial part to their continued success and survival. The most famous Corsair is, of course, our boy from Ianden, Prince Uriel, who did some awesome stuff, but was also pretty reckless, so Ianden banished him when the Tyranids came and Ianden lost its two allies, and they were in big, big trouble. The Farseer sent a message out to Uriel saying, please come back and help save us. And he did. And he doomed himself by picking up the cursed Spear of Twilight to save his craft world. So he, without the Corsairs, that craft world's gone, and information trade is just non-existent.
There you go. I'm looking at the time, and I've just come up with an idea, which I haven't run past you, but I've decided we'll do. This is going to be one of a two-part on Eldar, because I'm just seeing your candor and you're very quick to respond to all these questions, and I think if we tried to squeeze this into 45 minutes, we're doing our listenership a disservice, and I think I'm doing your knowledge base a disservice too. I think that there's so much more to unpack here. What do you think?
Look, I haven't touched upon the unknown Shining Spears Phoenix Lord or the rumours of a Warp Spider Phoenix Lord. I haven't touched based with... so much Eldar knowledge.
I know. It's like, how much do we squeeze into a 45-minute show? Like, are you down with another with a part two of this?
I could definitely do a part two, man. I could do a 10-part series and just focus on a craft world for 45 minutes. Like, I mentioned half a dozen craft worlds that are the minor craft worlds, and the only one that got any kind of love was Altensar. But I want to talk about my main boys, Yimlok, which is my color scheme inspired, which is some of my army composition inspired, which after 20 years in the hobby, I went, you know what? I'm going to get a tattoo. So I got a tattoo of their Craftworld emblem as well as a rune as well, because I was like, 20 years in, I'm pretty sure this isn't just a phase.
I'm going to Bali in 9 days, and there's two things I'm going to achieve in Bali. I'm going to buy an Incarn from Spoils of War Warhammer shop in Bali, and I'm going to get an Elder tattoo while I'm there.
Ooh, buddy, we will talk more about this, because yeah, I need to get my second one, because mine's like runic, and I want similar style but different runes. Yeah, we can talk about this. I can.
We've got 9 days. We've got 9 days, and as many bintangs as it takes for me to find the tattoo artist. But just to finish this episode off, and what I'm going to say to the listenership is, if you've gotten this far, keep the questions coming, because this is actually fascinating for me and my ADHD. I am not distracted during this episode, and I'm actually loving it. So if there are more questions based on what you've heard, feel free to just keep adding them. Which path would you like to walk if you lived on a craft world? That's from Trent Orwin too.
Yeah, look, Trent messaged me going, like, how many questions can I ask? And I was like, dude, go nuts. Trent and I, we've known each other for a long time. He has asked me 4 to the power of 40 questions about this lovely hobby of ours. So I'm not surprised he had lots of questions for me. I would go Path of the Ortach. One of the reasons being is Path of the Ortach has to travel multiple paths before they get there. But I also think they're one of the most underrepresented paths for Eldar, because like the Farseers get so much love because they're like, yeah, see the future, and Aspect Warriors are like, yeah, we're rad as hell. But the Ortach has traveled many, many different paths, and he's the one that pulls all the strings. He is the commander of the armies. He is the one that, you know, makes sure that they survive, and he doesn't do it for glory, because there is no real glory in that. So if I had to follow a path, it would be Path of the Ortach.
Path of the Ortach. And Sam Young had one of those in his army. It was the Ortach Wayleaper, and it just sat on his home objective for the entire game, which meant that my beloved Imperial Knights could not kill him. We could never be honored. We did not get our 5-up feel no pain, and he was just doing the buffs.
Not just the buffs. He's like, you know what? Do you want a command point? Have one.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a new turn for us? Have another command point. Oh, yeah. It's another turn? Oh, for what, 80 points, you can have 5 command points.
You need the fate dice and the command points. Yeah, I get it. Hey, I'm walking down this road too, and I just want our listenership to know that I spoke to Minches about doing Eldar way before 10th.
Look, I have mentioned to many people, Ben, and you laugh, but I've mentioned to many people, and I go, at least, especially in the Queensland community, but definitely for enough people around Australia, people can't look at me and go, oh, he's jumping on the bandwagon, because I have repped them in their highest of highs and I have repped them in their lowest of lows. So,
And you did well with them at Uprising.
Yeah, I was pretty happy. 40-something, which was pretty good. And if people want to see any models in particular, ask questions, because I literally counted... Did I count the other day? I have the entire Phoenix Court. I have Avatar. I have 15 Farseers. Like, it's a stupid amount. So if there's any old models or cool models you want to see, let me know, because I will more than happy take photos of them and send them to you, because I have a cabinet, IKEA bully bookshelf with the doors, and it is over full with an entire army not inside. Sorry, two entire 2,000 point armies not inside, plus 40 Wraith Guards sitting in my cupboard as I'm waiting for the bases to be done. And it's overstuffed. So there will be a second cabinet gotten, and the Harlequins aren't in that either. They're on a separate cupboard.
Insane. But no, it's good when the meta comes to you. And it's good that, you know, I can clearly see that you are exceptionally passionate, knowledgeable, and yeah, it's another element of the hobby that some of us are into, some of us aren't. So lore is for some of us, not all of us. And I actually know a lot of people that like the books, like the lore, like the models, but not interested in the game.
I have a workmate who literally said exactly that. Like, he's like, I listen to podcasts about it, I listen to Lorehammer, and I never want to play, but the history and the lore and the background of 40K is so deep that
Ricky from Adeptus Ridiculous doesn't play the game. He loves the minis, he loves the aesthetic, he likes the idea behind the game, but he just loves the lore.
Yeah,
it's the story is what his addiction is, and that is his passion on Adeptus Ridiculous. So we're at our 45-minute mark, Minches.
Yeah, so the only thing I need to do, because I don't want to forget, is I need to do a big shout-out to Irresistible Force at Tanamira for organising me another two packets of red flowers and pink flowers for the 200 bases that I need to finish off with my Eldar army, for encouraging my love and respect of the Eldar, and just for being good sponsors and looking after us and being good friends too. So big shout out to Irresistible Force for that. Massive thank you for your help and support.
And Thomas Olu with the Korn Army that we'll be withdrawing soon. Phil Wessels at the Dragon's Lair. St. Mary's. Once we get
48 people. 48 people 48 away from a Lionel Johnson.
48 people, and we're giving away a Lionel Primarch. So, and the people that are actively sharing and are visibly sharing and sharing their sharing, you're our heroes, you're our Primarchs. We're not doing this for money, I'll keep saying it, but the more people we can reach, the greater our sponsors get. our sponsors' reach is, and we can keep the giveaways going.
Improve the content.
Improve the content, improve the quality of the things. But yeah, this is part one, and it could end up being three parts. I think it's worthy of it.
Appreciate that, Ben, because I love my boys.
Yeah,
unequivocally. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us for a very, very different episode tonight. And as always, give us feedback. Hit us up. Say you liked it, you didn't like it, you thought it was awesome, we fucking suck, I know nothing about Eldar, whatever you need to do, just let us know. And any other future ideas you have for episodes, I know that I have a teams tournament coming up soon, so I might even talk to some of the teams people, and we might have to get another special guest on after the event.
Yeah, for sure.
Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we will see you again next week.
See you guys.